Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. On the show today, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher, and we close with our program, American Stories. But first,
Jill Biden is the wife of former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic Party's nominee for president. Jill Biden has worked as an English teacher for over 30 years. She has two master's degrees, both of which she earned while teaching and raising a family. She earned a doctorate in education from the University of Delaware in 2007. If her husband becomes the nation's 46th president, she will become the first ever U.S. First Lady with a doctoral degree. Jill Biden was the nation's second lady during the presidency of Barack Obama. In that position, she worked in support of military families, educated young women about breast cancer prevention, and helped direct the public's attention on community colleges. During the 8 years that her husband served as vice president, she taught English at a community college just outside of Washington, D.C. Jill Biden was born in New Jersey on June 5, 1951. Her given name was Jill Tracy Jacobs. She grew up in Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, just north of Philadelphia. She has four younger sisters. As a college student, Jill Jacobs first studied fashion sales at a local community college. But she was not happy with her classes and left the school. In 1970, she married Bill Stevenson, a college football player. A short time later, she began attending the University of Delaware, where she changed her major to English. She and Stevenson later separated and eventually divorced. Jill Jacobs earned a bachelor's degree at the university in 1975. That same year, she met Joe Biden, then a U.S. senator. The two were married 2 years later. Jill Biden helped raise her husband's two boys from his first marriage, which ended in tragedy. His first wife and their baby daughter were killed in a traffic accident in 1972. Joe and Jill Biden had their own child, a girl, in 1981. While pregnant, Jill Biden completed the first of her three advanced degree programs, a Master of Education from Westchester University in Pennsylvania. She earned a second master's degree in 1987 from nearby Villanova University. In the early 1980s, she began teaching English classes at a hospital for young people with mental health issues. She later spent many years as an English teacher at public high schools in Delaware and then at a local community college. While her husband served as vice president, Jill Biden was a full-time professor of English at Northern Virginia Community College. She taught classes there against the advice of her aides at the time. "Being a teacher is not what I do, but who I am," she wrote in her memoir. In the book, she told about changing into a cocktail dress and heels in a restroom at her school before attending a White House event. She also wrote about grading papers on Air Force Two, the airplane she and her husband used for official trips. Biden has said she plans to continue teaching if she becomes First Lady. As Second Lady, Biden used her expertise in teaching to bring attention to the importance of community colleges. She has described those schools as one of America's best-kept secrets. She worked on several projects related to community colleges during the Obama administration. Jill Biden continued teaching English classes at Northern Virginia Community College until the autumn of 2019. 3 months earlier, Joe Biden had announced he would seek the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. It marked his third time running for president. That August, Jill Biden decided to put her teaching career on hold to help her husband on the campaign trail. In late 2019 and early 2020, she traveled extensively across the country, reaching out to voters and speaking at campaign events. Since the coronavirus health crisis began, she has taken part in many online meetings in support of her husband's candidacy. Her role has marked a considerable change for someone who was a self-described introvert and who did not wish to become a political wife. In her memoir, she wrote that giving her first political speech made me so nervous I felt sick. Last month, Jill Biden gave one of her biggest speeches yet during the Democratic National Convention. She offered a hopeful and emotional picture of a Biden presidency. Speaking from a Delaware high school where she taught English years ago, Jill Biden spoke about the issues raised as schools must decide whether to begin in-person teaching as the health crisis continues. If we entrust this nation to Joe, he will do for your family what he did for ours. Bring us together and make us feel whole. Carry us forward in our time of need. Keep the promise of America for us all. And she promised that if her husband is elected president, America's classrooms will ring out with laughter and possibility again. I'm Ashley Thompson.
Company Marvel Studios has some difficult decisions to make as it plans the sequel to Black Panther. The 2018 release was Hollywood's first major superhero film centered on Black characters. It was nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. It won 3 Oscars. In the film, Chadwick Boseman starred as T'Challa, who rules the imaginary African nation of Wakanda as the Black Panther with his superpowers. Critics praised the actor for his performance, and he was expected to return to the part in the sequel. But sadly, Boseman died of cancer on August 28th. He was 43 years old. Writers, professors, and activists spoke to Reuters news agency about the cultural importance of the movie and Boseman's performance. Some said Marvel should honor Boseman by retiring the character of T'Challa and choosing another character to name as Black Panther. Jamil Smith writes for Rolling Stone magazine. He says the movie makers should follow the story of the comic book series on which it is based. In the series, T'Challa is severely hurt by an enemy, and the character Shuri, his sister, becomes Black Panther. The actor Letitia Wright played the character in the movie. Smith told Reuters news agency, "We've seen her in action. We've seen her in the middle of these fights. Why would we not think she'd have the courage and strength to become the next Black Panther?" Another possibility suggested is for the sequel to become a prequel, telling the story of Black Panther as a young boy. Does his character come back as Little Black Panther? Said Nicole Turner-Lee. She is a public policy researcher at the Brookings Institution. Does Disney honor the imagination of young boys and girls who looked up to him? Disney and Marvel chose not to comment when Reuters asked about their plans. On August 30th, Disney honored Bozeman by broadcasting the movie on television, followed by a special program about the actor. Black Panther first appeared in Marvel Comics in 1966. The company's former writer and publisher, Stan Lee, created the character. The 2018 movie was hugely popular. It cost $200 million to make and earned $1.35 billion from moviegoers. Marvel had planned to begin production of Black Panther 2 in March 2021 and release it the following year. But the company said it suspended plans following Bozeman's death. The movie came after years of criticism about the lack of actors and filmmakers of color in Hollywood. Black Panther crushed the belief that black films cannot be hugely successful, said Nicole Turner-Lee. She said the film proves that being inclusive sells. Black Panther also hit movie theaters at a time of growing racial tension in the U.S. Alan Jenkins is a professor at Harvard Law School. One part of what made the film so important was the world of Wakanda and the idea of an African nation unchained by colonialism, slave trade, exploitation. It had dignity, brilliance, and technology. Today, Black Panther may be even more meaningful as Black Americans suffer more from COVID-19 and police abuses than whites, cultural experts say. The idea of Wakanda provides safety from that suffering. The film certainly didn't cause the activism of today. That was from the tragic killing of George Floyd and others, said Jenkins. But, he said, it helped people see new realities and imagine a world that is more just and equitable than the one in which we live. I'm Alice Bryant.
Today we answer a question from Morgan in China. Morgan writes, I have a question about the words glad and happy. In which situations would I use them? I am confused by these words. Thanks so much. Dear Morgan, thank you for writing. First, let us take a look at the two words and see how they are the same and how they are different. Glad and happy both share the meaning of the feeling of pleasure, joy, or delight. Sometimes the two words can be used the same way. In sentences with the words be, look, or feel, glad and happy are very similar, so either one can be used. Here are two examples.
He feels glad about how things turned out. She looks happy with her coat.
You can also use glad or happy when you want to say that someone is willing to do something. For example,
I would be glad to join you.
I would be happy to help you. One way in which you would use happy and not glad is when you are describing a feeling of pleasure and enjoyment because of your life or situation. For example, she was a very happy child. Happy is better in this sentence for this reason. The child was happy because of conditions in her situation. It was more than just one event.
If you were to say that the child was glad, it would be a temporary feeling. For example,
she was very glad when her father came home.
Another time when you would use happy instead of glad is when it is used as an adjective.
I could hear the child's happy laughter from the other room.
And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gregory Stockel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Our story today is called The Line of Least Resistance. It was written by Edith Wharton. Here is Larry West with the story.
Mr. Minden returned home for lunch. His wife, Millicent, was not at home. The servants did not know where she was. Mr. Minden sat alone at the table in the garden. He ate a small piece of meat and drank some mineral water. Mr. Minden always ate simple meals because he had problems with his stomach. Why, then, did he keep a cook among his servants? Because his wife, Millicent, liked to invite her friends to big dinners and serve them rare and expensive food and wine. Mr. Minden did not enjoy his wife's parties. Millicent complained that he did not know how to enjoy life. She did a lot of things that he did not like. Millicent wasted Mr. Minden's money and was unpleasant to him, but he never got angry with his wife. After eating, Mr. Minden took a walk through his house. He did not stay long in the living room. It reminded him of all the hours he had spent there at his wife's parties. The sight of the formal dining room made him feel even more uncomfortable. He remembered the long dinners where he had to talk to his wife's friends for hours. They never seemed very interested in what he was saying. Mr. Minden walked quickly past the ballroom where his wife danced with her friends. He would go to bed after dinner, but he could hear the orchestra playing until 3 in the morning. Mr. Minden walked into the library. No one in the house ever read any of the books, but Mr. Minden was proud to be rich enough to have a perfectly useless room in his house. He went into the sunny little room where his wife planned her busy days and evenings. Her writing table was covered with notes and cards from all her friends. Her waste paper basket was full of empty envelopes that had carried invitations to lunches, dinners, and theater parties. Mr. Minden saw a letter crushed into a small ball on the floor. He bent to pick it up. Just as he was about to throw it into the waste paper basket, he noticed that the letter was signed by his business partner, Thomas Antrim. But Antrim's letter to Mr. Minden's wife was not about business. As Mr. Minden read it, he felt as if his mind was spinning out of control. He sat down heavily in the chair near his wife's little writing table. Now the room looked cold and unfamiliar. "Who are you?" the walls seemed to say. "Who am I?" Mr. Minden said in a loud voice. "I'll tell you who I am. I am the man who paid for every piece of furniture in this room. If it were not for me and my money, this room would be empty." Suddenly, Mr. Minden felt taller. He marched across his wife's room. It belonged to him, didn't it? The house belonged to him, too. He felt powerful. He sat at the table and wrote a letter to Millicent. One of the servants came into the room. "Did you call, sir?" he asked. "No," Mr. Minden replied. "But since you are here, please telephone for a taxi cab at once." The taxi took him to a hotel near his bank. A clerk showed him to his room. It smelled of cheap soap. The window in the room was open, and hot noises came up from the street. Mr. Minden looked at his watch. 4 o'clock. He wondered if Millicent had come home yet and read his letter. His head began to ache, and Mr. Minden lay down on the bed. When he woke up, it was dark. He looked at his watch. 8 o'clock. Millicent must be dressing for dinner. They were supposed to go to Mrs. Targe's house for dinner tonight. Well, Mr. Minden thought, Millicent would have to go alone. Maybe she would ask Thomas Antrim to take her to the party. Mr. Minden realized he was hungry. He left his room and walked down the stairs to the hotel dining room. The air, smelling of coffee and fried food, wrapped itself around his head. Mr. Minden could not eat much of the food that the hotel waiter brought him. He went back to his room, feeling sick. He also felt hot and dirty in the clothing he had worn all day. He had never realized how much he loved his home. Someone knocked at his door. Mr. Minden jumped to his feet. "Minden?" a voice asked. "Are you there?" Mr. Minden recognized that voice. It belonged to Lawrence Macy. 30 years ago, Macy had been very popular with women, especially with other men's wives. As a young man, he had interfered in many marriages. Now, in his old age, Lawrence Macy had become a kind of marriage doctor. He helped husbands and wives save their marriages. Mr. Minden began to feel better as soon as Lawrence Macy walked into his hotel room. 2 men followed him. One was Mr. Minden's rich uncle, Ezra Brownrigg. The other was the Reverend Dr. Boniphant, the minister of St. Luke's Church, where Mr. Minden and his family prayed every Sunday. Mr. Minden looked at the 3 men and felt very proud that they had come to help him. For the first time in his married life, Mr. Minden felt as important as his wife Millicent. Lawrence Macy sat on the edge of the bed and lit a cigarette. "Mrs. Minden sent for me," he said. Mr. Minden could not help feeling proud of Millicent. She had done the right thing. Macy continued. "She showed me your letter. She asks you for mercy." Macy paused and then said, "The poor woman is very unhappy, and we have come here to ask you what you plan to do." Now, Mr. Minden began to feel uncomfortable. "To do?" he asked. "To do? Well, I plan to leave her." Macy stopped smoking his cigarette. "Do you want to divorce her?" he asked. "Why, yes, Mr. Minden replied. Macy knocked the ashes from his cigarette. "Are you absolutely sure that you want to do this?" he asked. Mr. Minden nodded his head. "I plan to divorce her," he said loudly. Mr. Minden began to feel very excited. It was the first time he had ever had so many people sitting and listening to him. He told his audience everything, beginning with his discovery of his wife's love affair with his business partner, and ending with his complaints about her expensive dinner parties. His uncle looked at his watch. Dr. Bonifant began to stare out of the hotel window. Macy stood up. "Do you plan to dishonor yourself, then?" he asked. "No one knows what has happened. You are the only one who can reveal the secret. You will make yourself look foolish." Mr. Minden tried to rise, but he fell back weakly. The three men picked up their hats. In another moment, they would be gone. When they left, Mr. Minden would lose his audience and his belief in himself and his decision. "I won't leave for New York until tomorrow," he whispered. Lawrence Macy smiled. "Tomorrow will be too late," he said. "Tomorrow, everyone will know you are here." Macy opened the hotel room door. Mr. Brownrigg and Dr. Bonifant walked out of the room. Macy turned to follow them when he felt Mr. Minden's hand grab his arm. I will come with you," Mr. Minden sighed. It's for the children." Lawrence Macy nodded as Mr. Minden walked out of the room. He closed the door gently.
You have just heard the story, The Line of Least Resistance. It was written by Edith Wharton. Your storyteller was Larry West. This is Shep O'Neill.
And that is our show for today. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.